Welcome to Eastern Standard, produced for WEKU by Dynamics Productions, with support from the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky and the Appalachian Impact Fund, working together to promote community collaboration, economic development, and education by increasing charitable giving and philanthropic investments across communities in southeastern Kentucky. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for joining us. This is part two of a series about renter-landlord distress in the pandemic economy. Part one is in our archive at esweku.org. With us now to begin part two of this series is Ginny Ramsey, director of the Catholic Action Center in Lexington. Ginny and her staff work as advocates for people who are caught up in this eviction crisis. Thanks for your time, Ginny.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
And we know that there's a moratorium on evictions of renters who have lost jobs, can't make their monthly payments. So first, let's talk about that. Do you encounter people who mistakenly believe that this means that their payments are forgiven and don't understand that they're instead actually accruing and will be due once the moratorium is lifted?
I think that at the beginning, when the moratorium was put on, many people looked at it as a time when their rent was going away. As time has passed, however, the realization that all of that has accrued has become very real because, as you know, back in August, there were those beginning to be evicted due to the fact of not paying rent. Previous to the CDC moratorium, you know, there was a time of probably more than 60 days that it got pretty dicey. And particularly for those who felt that, okay, it means we don't have to pay rent.
So that was a big crack to fall through. Now we're back under a temporary moratorium that runs only through the end of January. You're advocating for people who are being evicted despite the moratorium. Why is that happening?
Well, there are many ways around the moratorium, as landlords had found. Now, I do want to say this. The assistance is truly landlord assistance. I want people to understand that this is the purpose, is to make everyone whole. There are many folks who thought that their rent was just canceled. It wasn't a matter of paying. You get bits and pieces. People hear all kinds of rumors. The reality is the landlords and the owners have got to be paid because it is not only a business, but for many, a livelihood. So, yes, there are people who have been able to be evicted despite the moratorium, and landlords in some cases have gotten fairly creative because it's only for non-payment that they're the moratorium. For those, they can declare that they want them to be gone for another reason, that they've broken their lease. The big thing we're running into now is lease expiration. Most, you know, this has been going on now for 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
There are many folks who are on month to month or are on annual, who simply are not getting their lease renewed. They won't renew their lease due to the fact, even if they have been impacted by the pandemic, truly they're not, it's not their fault, but they're those who feel like I've got to get them gone. Now, it doesn't make sense to us because one of the things in advocating, we talk to the landlords, you know, that's part of it, is trying to let them know we're here for them to help make the situation whole. And some of the landlords are willing to give up the past rents that they will get at some time. You know, there are programs coming in. It is going to happen. However, they can't keep it up. So they're saying the lease is expired. The renters have caused other difficulties. There are ways to have them evicted even during the moratorium.
I think numbers and percentages help people wrap their arms around a problem like this to understand what the proportion is in their community. Can you help us with that? What are we looking at here in terms of people who are on the edge here?
21% of our population live at or below poverty. And that was before the pandemic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they were starting at a deficit on a very slippery slope. So being cut back hours, working at a restaurant that's closed and not being able to get their unemployment. I mean, all of those things, they don't have 6 months of savings or a 401k that they could draw on. They have nothing. So 21% is a lot of people. And that's Lexington, Kentucky. I'm not talking about the outer counties whose percentages could be higher. So we're looking at slippery slopes last February before it began. And now those slopes have engulfed many of the folks. So when you're, our real focus on this at this point is to be there for the families and the vulnerable. I mean, we had different cases, and they're all anecdotal, but they're real people. A woman who was suffering from cancer, who had her disability had been cut due to too many medical bills, which happens, which a lot of people don't realize that happens. So what had occurred with her is she was being evicted in the midst of the pandemic. And we were able, with this community group of volunteers, their faith community folks, there are over 13 groups who give volunteers to be the connector to these people who are in the throes of eviction. We know we can't stop them all, but we're able to deal with those that are truly have court-ordered evictions or are finding themselves put out overnight. You know, they're who we're focusing on. And, you know, it's an amazing thing to have watched. This is one of the silver linings, to see the community that cares, reaches out, connects them to the services that can provide the rental assistance, connects them to the utility assistance, because there are many fronts of this problem. Many folks with utilities being turned off is an automatic eviction, basically, and that has been occurring. So the numbers that we've dealt with are in the hundreds. You know, we had 700 to 800 folks that we have worked with to save their homes, but that's a drop in the bucket in Fayette County.
We are on a very tight time frame here. This current extension of the moratorium runs only until January 31st, and we don't know right now whether it will be extended. What do you envision happening if it isn't?
I'm a person of faith and hope, and I believe it will be. After January 21st, we have been, the new administration has committed to extending it. If it were not to be extended, Fayette County is going to get like $20 million for landlord assistance, and it will make a lot of people whole. It may not be enough, but if it were to drop without the protection, I feel that we would see a tsunami of those who are becoming homeless. We're already seeing a lot. It's not like it isn't happening now, but it's as if we're holding back the dam before it bursts. And it's going to take the intervention of the federal, state, local monies and programs, but it also is taking the education of the folks who are living in fear that tomorrow they're going to be evicted. You know, there are a lot of people who need the educational side of finding out, yes, there are people here for you. Yes, you can get the help. Let us walk with you.
Okay, and we also have other organizations doing that work who are represented later on in the program. So I urge everybody to stick with us and get the information that you need to keep a roof over your head. Jenny Ramsey, Director of the Catholic Action Center in Lexington. Thank you so much, Jenny.
You're very welcome.
Let's turn now to another source of support for renters and landlords in distress. With us from the Fair Housing Council in Lexington is its director, Art Crosby. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Art.
Thanks for having me.
And Art, if you would lay it out for us, what are you seeing happening in the residential rental market as this pandemic keeps people from working and unable to make their monthly payments?
Yeah, there's a big difference between what we saw and what we saw last time during the recession. During the recession, we had probably equal parts homeowners and home renters really coming in, a lot of people having housing issues. And during the COVID issue, we again having a lot of people at risk losing their homes. But to be honest, in about the year we've been into this, I've had one homeowner contact me. It's almost all exclusively home renters, just based on the people who are being impacted by the COVID pandemic. And, you know, when we see the numbers coming through, it's a very specific kind of group. It's a lot of people who have children. It's about 44% African-American, at least in the Lexington and Central Kentucky community. Their rent's about $750, give or take. It's not people who are already on subsidy. It's not already people who are on disability or getting Social Security or pensions or were in housing authority property. These are all people who were working prior to the pandemic, large number of veterans. It's a very kind of distinct group, people who were always kind of at risk for eviction, but were always able to hang on, and the pandemic just kind of threw them over the edge.
So what is your agency doing? What is it able to do to support renters and landlords, for that matter, who are in this predicament?
So kind of what we did as soon as, you know, early March, April, we knew that the current system we had in place for dealing with evictions just wasn't going to be sufficient. It kind of was patchwork. There was no kind of data. There was no analysis. There was no kind of tracking. People just in the middle of evictions had to run to 20 different agencies and in the middle of potentially losing their home, hope they could all pull it all together and stay. We knew that wasn't going to work. So we started working, communicating with local nonprofits, city government. We put together about 20 agencies, came up with a COVID-19RenterHelp.org website, had one central location where people could enter their information. Went through a bunch of revisions on that, you know, making sure there was language access, making sure it would be available in different formats, making sure people who didn't have access to the internet could use it. So we tried to really get a system in place, even when we had some money, but we didn't have enough money to meet all the demand, but we wanted to at least, at the very least, know what the demand was. So when those numbers started coming in, we could track them. And then at some point, the LFUCG, Lexington Fayette Urban County Government was able to put some money to it. The governor's office put a bunch of money through the Healthy at Home program, and we were able to, you know, use that resource to kind of direct those people. And then in Lexington, the Fayette Urban County Government has taken over the COVID-19RenterHelp.org website, has been assigning staff to it, making sure people get called back. And then as hopefully the money comes in from the federal government with this last COVID stimulus package, they're going to have hopefully enough money to meet at least most of the demand.
Okay. And once again, that website is COVID-19RenterHelp.org. Are eventual evictions accumulating as this moratorium continues? What do you see happening once the moratorium on evictions is lifted?
So there are still evictions going on right now for multiple reasons. People could always evict people if they were doing something wrong in their unit, you know, breaking the lease, threatening people, drugs, that kind of thing. Those evictions were always going through. Some landlords are continuing to evict people, even when they shouldn't. Some are turning off the electricity. Some are going through court. Sometimes tenants just don't appear. Sometimes tenants aren't aware. You have to actually fill out a CDC declaration form to have that eviction moratorium. It's not automatic. Sometimes tenants can't make it to a Zoom meeting, and therefore they wind up evicted. So some evictions are still coming and going, but we know that a lot of them are just being passed off. And some of it really is just kicking the can down the road. There's been a number of extensions. The last extension went from the end of December till now, currently the end of January. At some point, you know, the piper has to be paid. But what we're hoping is that with that COVID stimulus, that the money that will be coming in from the federal government, we can clear through most of those. And, you know, hopefully that we're buying time to actually put that and implement that program into use.
You said something a second ago that I think is really important to reemphasize. You said that in order to fall under the protection of the moratorium, you must fill out a form?
Yeah, there's a signed CDC declaration form. There's a couple of requirements. You have to make less than $100,000, essentially. You have to be have your income impacted by COVID. You have to be doing your best to pay what you can, and you have to be seeking assistance. If you qualify for all those, then your landlord's not able to evict you for non-payment of rent.
And where can you find that form?
You could Google CDC declaration form, or it's also available on that COVID-19RentnerHelp.org site.
Okay. And do you see anything coming out of this that we could remotely call positive? Is there any kind of silver lining? Tell us there is, Art.
There is. I think we become more aware how important housing is, especially when people have to stay at their home, especially when people are doing education at their home, especially when people are doing employment at their home, how important it is for all of us to have a home to stay in. And we've seen that there is a system that we can put in place that lets people keep their home, but also at the same time, make sure landlords keep paid, that the system works. I think we are learning some things about how to maintain that system, how to prioritize housing, but also how to make sure the economy still thrives and people can afford to be landlords and take advantage of that as well.
Art Crosby, he is executive director of the Fair Housing Council in Lexington. Thank you so much, Art.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break,
we're seeing more folks who, in pre-COVID environment, perhaps would have never felt the need or ever felt that they would have been in the circumstances to rely on our community social service safety net.
I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU. Taking just a moment to thank the hosts of our collection of 10 series who bring expertise to the conversations you hear on Eastern Standard: Gerald Smith, Racial Justice and Equality; Jim Trimble, The Ethics and Virtues of Democratic Society; Cynthia Reeser, Educating and Learning in a Pandemic; Jackie Jay and Kathy Kern, The 19th Amendment, One Century Later; Chris Begley, Future Tense, What We Can Expect on the Other Side of the Pandemic; Lee Todd, The Many Connections Between Education and Economy; Tom Eblin, Conversations with Kentucky Authors; Stephanie Lang, Informing the Future with Stories from Kentucky's Past; Ray Geringer, Criminal Justice in Eastern Kentucky; and Carla Gover, Kentucky Songcrafters. Our thanks to these partners for going the extra mile and contributing to Eastern Standard. Before the break, we heard the extent of the landlord-tenant distress as this pandemic economy has cost the livelihoods of people, many living paycheck to paycheck and now at risk of losing their rental homes. For a look at how one city is dealing with this universal crisis, we put in calls to Tyler Scott, Chief of Staff to Lexington Mayor Linda Gorton, and Lexington Social Services Commissioner Chris Ford. We'll begin with you, Tyler Scott, and ask you to give us the broad view, if you could, of what the city is doing, how, and why. What are the overall goals of the mayor here?
Okay, yes, thank you, Tom. We identified the pending problem of evictions early on as we saw our COVID cases rise here and across the state, and the unemployment that really spiked every single week almost throughout the spring and summer that came along with the shutdowns and just the general reluctance of public activity. We looked at very early whether or not the mayor had within her own executive authority rights to implement a local moratorium. While she does have broad authority under the executive emergency powers, this is not one of those things that she could have done on her own. So from there, we had to turn to other solutions. One of the very first things we were able to do was identify that in the original CARES Fund package approved by Congress, we could turn around some of that money that was coming to us through reimbursements to stand up our own eviction assistance fund. And that's exactly what we did. The mayor made that her top priority with the money coming in. That was the very first dollar coming in was going to go to that program. She proposed, I think it was around $3 million at the time, for a program that would assist those at risk of being evicted. Because at the time, the moratoriums were being challenged in courts. There might be something at the state level one day, and the federal level the next. It was a very confusing time. So we wanted to make sure the assistance we were getting was going directly to the renters by way of providing the rental fee to the landlord. So it was a very quick cut the check, get everything verified that it was a COVID-related issue, and then we could help those in need as fast as we possibly could.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, has the city received another round of funding under this latest stimulus bill?
We did not. We will not receive the same type of funding as we received in the previous bill. The previous one allowed us to apply for reimbursement for our own expenses, and when that reimbursement came in, it was essentially unattached to any particular use. We could use it for things like eviction assistance or food insecurity programs, or we stood up our own small business assistance program and things like that. This latest round has a emergency rental assistance component to it, but it will be very tightly restricted in that area. So it does not give us the same flexibility as the previous fund did.
Has anything been done to streamline the process of applying for and getting help from the city?
Yeah, so we did have a bit of a backlog issue. So when we stood up the program, we were very sure to make sure we did not take on all of the processing ourselves. We relied very heavily on our partner agencies, our social service partner agencies. They have their own traditional constituencies. They're on a first name basis with a lot of these people, and so they already have a very firm relationship with a lot of the people that they may need this. But this is a very different time. This isn't like any other recession we've had before. So we learned very quickly that this crisis we're in affected a lot of the non-traditional faces that our partners would normally see. So what we did was, and we still work with our partners very closely, but we did take the onus of the backlog of those applications. We took it back in-house, reallocated several of our own staffers, and are reaching out directly to those folks that have been caught up in that backlog, and a lot of it's due to incomplete applications or some missing verification. And so they're working through that backlog to reach directly out to those in need to find out what's holding them up. We want to get this more streamlined. We know we've got to continue to do everything we can to get out to those in need, but it's just going to take a lot more effort and I think a lot more creativity to reach folks that have never really had to work within a system like this before.
Well, as we know, this the moratorium now expires on January 31st. Of course, the pandemic doesn't expire then. Do you anticipate that there will be further extensions?
We're going to continue to advocate for it with our federal delegation. We'll see what the new administration in D.C. brings to the table. I certainly hope so. That would be helpful. We know that is our only route as far as the moratorium goes. Otherwise, we will continue to provide as much financial assistance with the programs we have for as long as we can. The other side of this is the best way to address this in the long term is to get to a point where we can safely reopen the economy and get our unemployment numbers back down. And we do that by really getting behind a strong plan to get vaccines into as many arms as we possibly can.
Tyler Scott is Chief of Staff in the office of Lexington Mayor Linda Gorton. Thank you, Tyler. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, let's look further into those safety nets. Chris Ford is Commissioner of Social Services for the City of Lexington. Greetings, Commissioner Ford.
Good afternoon, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We appreciate it. So first, if you could help us understand the extent of these circumstances in Lexington and Fayette County. How many Fayette County rental households are at risk of eviction?
We hear upwards of hundreds, if not into the thousands, the low number of thousands. We know that we've assisted in the neighborhood now of just over 500 households with rental assistance. And that represents a small portion of those that may be of need. But it is a dire issue brought on by a public health crisis that's had economic dire circumstances for many households. But we still know that the most safe place that many of our folks can be to combat the community spread of the virus is at home. And that's why it's even more important that we take extraordinary measures to help folks remain housed during this winter and during this season of coronavirus.
Have you been able to determine if most or maybe even all of those 500 or so homes would not be in the situation they're in were it not for this pandemic?
Yes. We have two programs primarily that we have launched this year in our initial efforts to provide relief for low to moderate income families. Many of them have been impacted financially. You know, for one reason or another, we have a program that has helped displaced workers whose place of employment was adversely impacted and injured their ability to earn income and support their family. And then there's other factors, whether the household has been impacted by the virus themselves, whether they've had to quarantine or lose income opportunities, if they have increased expenses from child care with schools not being in place, or food insecurity is also expanding during this time. So many of the programs that we've helped so far, we can definitely demonstrate that there has been a COVID-related impact.
What sort of assistance is the city making available?
We have two programs, as I mentioned. We have one program, which is called RISE, Rental Hardship for Impacted Service Employees. We are operating that program from our Division of Community and Resident Services. We're fortunate that that was an early spring of 2020 funding from the federal government, the early part of the CARES Act. So $500,000 is allotted there. Mayor Gordon's administration and our Urban County Council has also provided upwards of $1.7 million in additional funds, general fund dollars, to support our rental assistance programs. And many of the programs can provide rental assistance, you know, the payment of rental arrears and or utility costs up to $4,000 per household.
What criteria has to be met to qualify for assistance under the moratorium?
Both of the programs that we've mentioned earlier are for low to moderate income households. And so that is defined by HUD's definition of area median income, 80% or below of area median income. And that's roughly $45,000 for a household of four here in Fayette County. So income is one criteria. And then also demonstrating being impacted by COVID is another. It is also a requirement for one of our programs that the landlords are supportive or at least help endorse the resident's attempt and desire to seek these scarce funds in order to stay in their homes. We have an application process for both of those programs, and the city just recently announced our efforts to help standardize, if you will, that application process.
Are you running into situations where people think that they may be in too high an income bracket to qualify, but they actually do qualify for help?
If that were the case, we would always ask folks not to disqualify themselves. You know, Give us a call. Allow us to go through our formal processes to determine your eligibility before you may still qualify. But what we do know, though, Tom, is that we're seeing more folks who in pre-COVID environment perhaps would have never felt the need or ever felt that they would have been in the circumstances to rely on our community social service safety net. But nonetheless, you know, this is a pandemic that we haven't seen before. We are seeing more of that, and we welcome to help and guide folks through systems that they may not be otherwise familiar with.
Is there a form that an applicant must fill out? And if you would, and this might seem obvious, but could you emphasize for us why it is important that all of the information given is accurate and truthful?
Yes, we have a COVID-19RenterHelp.org website that folks can go to the website. They can fill in our pre-application that will then populate to our offices here at City Hall. This is worked in partnership with our Office of Homeless Prevention and Intervention and our Department of Social Services. And from there begins a pre-application process and a client intake process that hopefully very soon thereafter, a resident will be contacted by one of our team members and then referred to the appropriate funding agency. That starts the process. It is very important for a reason of timeliness. We tried our very best to streamline the process, but of course there will be some identification documents. There will need to be some supporting documents that helps us demonstrate the need and the clients and the household's eligibility. So as soon as we can get those documents, it always helps expedite the process.
While these moratoriums on evictions have been in place, delayed rent has been piling up month after month and will still be due once those protections expire. Are the city's homeless shelters increasing capacity in anticipation of possibly a wave of evictions once this moratorium is lifted?
Well, that's a great question because it definitely is a priority. We know that our homeless shelters are also impacted by COVID, and they're taking extreme measures to keep their population housed, sheltered, but of course, distanced and safe. And so that is a service delivery that is unconventional. You know, so we very much value all the efforts that our homeless shelters are continuing to provide throughout the pandemic. But we also recognize that the last thing our homeless shelter network probably could endure now is increased populations or capacity. And so that it also motivates and is a priority of us, of our community and our leadership and government, to do everything we can to provide additional resources to keep folks housed. So hopefully they won't need to resort to our network of shelters. Our shelters do a great job, but they have capacity concerns of their own, and we recognize that.
So we've been talking about tenants, but for their part, landlords, especially those with only a few properties, are weathering their own crisis here with rental payments drying up, but those mortgages and utilities still have to be paid. Is the city doing anything to help landlords?
Well, we are, through our advocacy on behalf of their clients and their residents. There's also another unique program that through the funding of the mayor's office and that the council authorized is we have a partnership with the Lexington Housing Authority. It is called the Affordable Housing Market Partnership because we do recognize that not the corporate, perhaps, apartment complexes or our housing units, but the smaller units, the smaller base landlords play such a critical role in providing affordable, safe housing for low-income residents. And we want them to be in the position to preserve that resource for our families. And so if we can provide the rental assistance to allow them to recoup the rent that they're due based on that lease agreement, we feel that it goes a long way to preserving affordable housing and having those landlords continue to be partners in our quest for affordable housing here in Lexington. So we're very sensitive to their plight as well.
We've been hearing that that some rental property owners and managers have been having to sort out on their own who is genuinely unable to pay versus tenants who are just gaming the situation. We know human nature, and it can happen, and they know they can't be evicted for non-payment. Has this kind of thing come to your attention? And I'm wondering, if so, how do you deal with it?
I have, for my role here in social services, I have become aware of, and I've heard cases where that applies. But in most cases, I think that many of our residents are truly in need, are truly unable to pay. And it's those, our programs have criteria and benefit standards. That's why it's important we have the documentation that we can demonstrate that we're helping those who are really in need and who really, at no fault of their own, are in the plight that they're in. But we're always trying to protect the integrity of our programs because these are scarce resources, and we want to be good stewards of those and help as many people as they can, those that are trying to help themselves and their families.
There is this new study from Georgia Tech on the human impact of evictions and their disproportionate impact on neighborhoods with more low-income households, people of color, households with children. And that research also identifies a connection between increasing eviction filings and a rise in reports of child maltreatment. Are you aware of any of this happening in Lexington or Fayette County?
I recognize that the instability and the traumatic impacts that evictions and being displaced can have on families, but primarily young children. It uproots them from their neighborhood, from their friendships, from the bonds they have with classmates. It also has a dire and drastic impact on uprooting them from their school and learning environments. And so many of the households that we've been able to serve so far with our assistance and those that we hope to serve in the future are households with children. And so I would not dispute, can't dispute, and actually can accept your description of the study from Georgia Tech about the impact that it has on children and young families primarily. Many led by women and mothers and grandmothers.
Is there anything in particular that you're looking for, wishing for from the Biden administration or this new Congress?
Yes, I believe, and we're optimistic, I think, here in local government, that there will be additional resources to come down. Our challenge is going to be to find program designs that will quickly and properly be able to get the resources in the hands of the families and residents that need them. So we're optimistic that more resources are coming to bear. We know that we cannot do it alone with the local resources, even though we've tried mightily our best. But hopefully resources from the federal and state level will help us battle through and forge ahead as we try to keep people housing secure throughout the duration of the pandemic.
That's Chris Ford. He's Commissioner of Social Services for the City of Lexington. Thank you so much, Commissioner Ford.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
There is more help out there. Among the community action agencies that receive CARES Act funds is the Kentucky River Foothills Development Council, based in Richmond and serving Clark, Estill, Madison, and Powell counties. And the council's Karen Atkins is on the line. Welcome to Eastern Standard, Karen.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Your agency has CARES Act funding that can help folks who've lost their jobs, their incomes, they can't pay the rent. I know that you also offer assistance in a lot of other areas, but let's begin with rent. What can you help people with?
Sure. So, you know, last year we did receive some CARES money. It was CSBG CARES, and that stands for Community Services Block Grant. And through this money, we're able to help anyone. They don't have to prove that they've been affected by COVID. This is for anyone that is eligible. And so the help that we can provide can go towards a mortgage payment, rental payment. We can help with emergency and temporary housing, such as a shelter at local hotels. We can offer help with security deposits, utility deposits, if needed to avoid homelessness. We can help with emergency food, tuition assistance, utility assistance. We can help with automobile payments and or car insurance payments, maybe even vehicle repairs and maintenance, if the vehicle is necessary for employment, healthcare, or essential uses. So that's important. It has to, you know, be used for those three things. And also it can help with employment-related expenses, such as uniforms, licensing, if required, to obtain employment. There is a cap on the amount that an individual can receive for a client. That's $800. And so oftentimes, if someone does apply and they don't receive the full $800, then they can apply multiple times until they reach that max of $800.
What sort of criteria has to be met to qualify for these funds?
Folks do have to be at 200% of the federal poverty level, and the poverty guidelines are easy to find online. For example, a family of four to qualify yearly, they would earn $52,400. So you do have to look up the poverty guidelines and then look at the 200% of that. And also, if there is a request to pay for a rent, a landlord would have to provide a vendor packet to us saying that they would accept the funds that we were to provide, and we would just need a copy of their lease or their eviction notice.
On the income evidence matter, do you have to provide, for example, what I'm thinking is that if you have to provide proof of income and your most recent tax return is for 2019, yet the pandemic struck in 2020, and so you lost your income as a result, you're going to be in worse straits now than would be reflected on that 2019 return. Is that a problem?
Oh, sure. We do understand that. And so we do ask if folks do have income coming in of any form for your pay stub, if you don't have income, if you haven't worked for a while, if you don't have a pay stub to provide, if you don't have anything that you can provide, then you would sign a self-declaration that you have no income. So we don't want that to be a hindrance to anyone. In fact, we're encouraging those folks that likely need it the most to please reach out to us and ask for help.
Okay, let's turn to another of those programs that you mentioned, the Crisis Energy Program. How does that work?
You must be in a position where you have a crisis. And so what that means is that if you're within 4 days of running out of fuel, whether that be coal, if you use fuel, oil, propane, kerosene, or gas, if that's your heat source, if you have a past due or a disconnect notice, if the natural gas or electric is the heat source. And so we're just encouraging folks to reach out to us as well. We will put more information on our website regarding all of the documents to provide in the following days. We're just working out a few kinks with the scheduling system. But there's not a, I don't want anyone to fear that money is going to be gone in a week or two. It will be there to help. But we're asking folks to call and then schedule an appointment that is conducted by phone.
In the introduction, I mentioned that your organization, the Kentucky River Foothills Development Council, covers Clark, Estill, Madison, and Powell counties. Are there similar agencies across the state?
Foothills is one of 23 community action agencies across the state. In fact, every community in the nation has an agency like Foothills where people can go to for help. And, you know, our whole mission at Foothills is to help people attain self-sufficiency, and we do that by offering over 40 programs.
Karen Atkins, Public Information Officer with the Kentucky River Foothills Development Council based in Richmond. Thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you, Tom.
To find contact information for the Community Action Agency in your county, go to capky.org. That's capky.org. A link, along with others, is posted on our site, esweku.org. In times like these, rights can be misunderstood or abused more often than usual. So we contacted the Lexington Human Rights Commission, where Ray Sexton is executive director. Thanks for joining us, Ray.
Thanks for having me.
And what are the rights, as defined by law, of tenants who might be facing eviction?
As it currently stands right now, tenants cannot be evicted, nor can they be charged any late fees. They cannot be evicted for non-payment of rent issues.
But of course, those rent payments and the late fees do accrue. Is that right? They build up?
They do. And the way the CDC guidelines are now is instead of going right to eviction, most judges and the guidelines state that the landlord should hear the tenant out, sit down, and try to work out some sort of payment arrangement for those late fees.
And as I understand it, the CDC moratorium and the governor's moratorium, which is in concert with the CDC's, is very specific, and it refers to non-payment of rental and fees, but other lease violations are still fair game?
That is correct.
Are you seeing an increase in cases?
As far as our office goes, because our mandate is a little more narrowly defined. We have to have some sort of discriminatory intent behind whatever the adverse housing action is before our office can get involved. So, I mean, we've seen a little bit of increase in telephone calls as far as referrals and things like that. But actually cases, we've probably received about 5 or 6 cases from the COVID-19RentersHelp.org website. Other than that, we haven't really seen an uptick as far as our overall case inventory, but we've been on a heightened sense of alert for some time. I mean, we're expecting at any moment the floodgates to open up. You know, unfortunately, these moratoriums can't last forever, and eventually they're going to start allowing evictions, and we feel that once that action takes place and people start receiving more evictions, then we will receive a high increase in our inventory.
Well, I imagine the answer to this question is pretty detailed, but if you could nutshell for us, how do you determine the veracity of a claim of discrimination in housing?
Well, it's a lot more hidden and underground these days than it used to be. Essentially, it basically boils down to unequal treatment. You're supposed to, you know, our office isn't out to tell you how to run your business, how to run your housing facility, however, whatever policies and procedures you do have, you're supposed to follow them across the board with respect to race, color, disability, all the protected classes. So a lot of the times it boils down to, let's say somebody gets evicted for non-payment of rent. Mm-hmm. Then what we do is we look at what their policies and procedures say, did they follow them, and how they've treated other people. And a lot of times what we'll see is we'll find an individual or individuals who may have done the same or similar things this individual did, and they didn't get evicted for it. And then we do comparisons based on the protected classes. So sometimes we find people outside the protected class that were treated more favorably. And that's how we look for discrimination these days.
Okay. And what about the flip side? What about landlords? These are often small businesses that can't afford to allow rental payments to go unpaid. What do they have rights that are protected?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tough thing, because a lot of people lose sight of the fact that, you know, these landlords are oftentimes small-time landlords that depend on these rental payments for, you know, paying their mortgages on these properties. So that's been tricky during this pandemic, is how do you walk the line between trying to help somebody and also, you know, not trying to take a landlord and ruin them and put them out of business. So that's kind of what you're seeing with these latest mandates, is there's been a lot of focus on, okay, get these people together, get the landlord and the tenant together to try to work out a payment plan. And what you're seeing is a lot of property owners are open to these payment plans because at least they're getting something coming through the door.
I know that there is a website that people can go to for information if they're experiencing a pending eviction or perceive that they're being discriminated against in the execution of an eviction. That site is COVID-19RentersHelp.org. And I'll repeat that for our listeners in just a moment. But Ray, tell us what we'll find on that site.
It's kind of a one-stop shop. You need help paying rent, or if you need help moving, if you need moving expenses, if you feel like you've been discriminated against, there's an online form that you can fill out. And what happens is whatever the issue is, those are triaged. And the COVID-19 Renters Help is an organization of about 30 organizations. So once that that questionnaire is filled out, it gets to the right agency. And it's, like I said, we've received a few cases from there, but they're triaged, sent to the right place. So it's supposed to save people time and not going all over the place trying to figure out, oh, heck, what do I need to do in this situation? What do I need to do in this situation? Just go there, fill it out, and it'll get sent to the right agency and the right help.
Okay, thank you for that information. That's Ray Sexton. He's Executive Director of the Lexington Human Rights Commission. Thanks for your time, Ray.
Sure, thank you.
Again, that website is COVID-19RentersHelp.org. So let's review the situation, a pandemic that has cost jobs and incomes. Adrienne Bush of the Housing and Homeless Coalition of Kentucky.
We are looking at a widespread problem that is affecting a lot of Kentuckians.
For renters who can't pay, a temporary safety net from Governor Beshear.
As a part of this new CARES Act that was passed, the CDC eviction moratorium was extended through the end of January. So yesterday I signed an executive order that extends our moratorium on evictions to match the CDC's.
But it's a classic double-edged sword. There are landlords to consider. Attorney James Pennington.
If tenants aren't paying landlord, then landlord's not able to pay mortgage. So as you can see, those dominoes start to fall, and it's, you know, creating a dire situation, you know, in the entire housing or rental market.
The big thing we're running into now is lease expiration.
Catholic Action Center Director Jenny Ramsey.
This has been going on now for 10 months. There are many folks who are on month-to-month or are on annual who simply are not getting their lease renewed. They won't renew their lease due to the fact, even if they have been impacted by the pandemic, it's not their fault. but there are those who feel like I've got to get them gone.
Assistance is available. We looked into a variety of resources. Lexington Social Services Commissioner Chris Ford.
Many of the programs can provide rental assistance, you know, the payment of rental arrears and our utility costs up to $4,000 per household.
And from Tyler Scott, Chief of Staff to Mayor Linda Gordon, word that these programs have been streamlined.
We wanted to make sure the assistance we were getting was going directly to the renters by way of providing that the rental fee to the landlord.
We're not mean-spirited people. We try to work with them.
Fred Schaefer of the Central Kentucky Landlord Association.
You know, it's landlord's best interest if a tenant can work out a plan and stick to it. That's always better than an empty unit.
We heard about help from the state's 23 community action agencies. Karen Atkins is with one of them, the Kentucky River Foothills Development Council in Richmond.
If you've never been in that position or know someone who has, the question is, who do you call for help? And so really last year, it became really evident really fast that many more people were applying for help that had previously not done so or had even not qualified in the past.
And from Ray Sexton of the Lexington Human Rights Commission, advice for landlord and tenant alike.
Most judges and the guidelines state that the landlord should hear the tenant out, sit down, and try to work out some sort of payment arrangement for those late fees.
At present, the CDC and state moratorium on evictions for non-payment of rent expires on January 31st. Will it be extended? Adrienne Bush.
We have signed on to a letter, and many organizations have as well here in Kentucky and across the nation, urging the incoming Biden administration to take action via executive order to strengthen the current CDC eviction moratorium and extend it.
A lifeline tossed into the future. This program was recorded days before the inauguration. President Biden has proposed extending the national moratorium on evictions and foreclosures until September 30th, while also setting aside funds to support households facing foreclosure or eviction. We'll be watching. Listen for a follow-up in the near future. Won't you take me home? That wraps this two-part series on home rental in a pandemic economy. Eastern Standard is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions with the support of the Foundation for Appalachian Kentucky, an accredited community foundation, and their Appalachian Impact Fund. Our executive producer is Mike Savage. Neil Kesterson is our producing engineer and audio editor. And our thanks to Zero Seven for the song Home. If you would like to listen to past editions of Eastern Standard, you can find them at weku.org or in our archive on esweku.org. The program is also available on the WEKU mobile app or as a podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to Eastern Standard on WEKU.